You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Gwendolyn Dolsky. Gwendolyn is an accomplished academic. And when she was 41 years old, a couple of years ago, she decided to intentionally push herself out of her comfort zone. So before we dive into the conversation with Gwendolyn, I want to invite you to think a little bit about yourself. What is comfort to you? Do you like to be and stay in your comfort zone, or do you enjoy putting yourself in uncomfortable situations? If you find yourself in a new and different uncomfortable situation, is that okay with you, or is it something that you don't like at all? I don't actually think that there's a right or wrong set of answers here, but I think it's maybe a fun question to think about. That is, if you are a person who likes to think about things. That's a hint, actually, about my guest today. Gwendolyn is a person who likes to think deeply about things. All right. Are you ready? Of course you are. Of course you are. Let's do it. Gwendolyn Dolsky, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. I'm excited. All right. So I start all of my conversations with the same question. I'm curious, what part of the world do you call home?
I'm in Los Angeles, California.
Fantastic. All right. Next warm-up question, because we're just getting to know each other a little tiny bit. What is a way that you like to transition from being very busy to downtime?
So whenever I'm stressed or I have a lot, I read mystery novels. I don't know what it is, but it's even the process of going to the bookstore and actually looking at all the titles and then having a thriller that I can't put down. And I think it's because it gets my mind out of the space of everything else. I can just lose myself into some kind of like Agatha Christie-esque problem. And it just relaxes me.
Very good answer. Do you like to read books or do you use an e-reader like a Kindle?
I prefer books.
All right.
I do have a Kindle. But you know what the problem is that I don't remember the books on the Kindle. And it turns out that when you read something electronically, it doesn't stick with you in the same way a physical book would. But for me, the physical books are almost like a photo album. I can pull out any book from the shelf and tell you when I bought it, why I bought it. Like, there's something very special about the physical book for me.
Yep. Nope. They're definitely different mediums. I like both also. I like the fact that the Kindle has the light in it, so I don't have to have other lights. It's a weird reason to pick a way to read, but I recently left a Kindle on an airplane and had to go without for like 7 or 8 days. And it was a real, real first world hardship. Nobody should feel sorry for me that I had to go and get an actual book. Anyway, topic of the day, not me leaving things on airplanes. We're going to talk about you making a decision to get out of your comfort zone. Are you ready for this conversation?
Yes.
All right. Very good.
I don't think I'm totally out of my comfort zone, but okay. Yeah.
So as is usual for me, this is the very first conversation that you and I have. We don't know each other in any other way. I don't actually know very much about you at all. What I know is that you made a change at age 41. So what I want to talk about is a little bit about what makes you tick and what your comfort zone looked like before you made this change. So when you were in your mid-30s-ish, let's talk about what your job was and your career.
Yeah, the job was the same. I actually still have the same position. And it's just routine. It is, I'm a professor at a university. I do my research. I would publish, I would go to academic conferences. And when you go to the academic conferences, you have an audience that is, you know, they all know what you're talking about. I mean, they can help you work out ideas, but there wasn't an excitement about it anymore. And so I just found myself that I was like a hamster on a wheel. Okay, prepare for this semester, go, great relationship with the students. But then I say bye after 15 weeks, brand new set of students. And in between, try to write an academic paper to show my peers. And I just needed more from my studies. My studies is in philosophy. I have a PhD in philosophy And I just wanted something outside of the walls of academia.
All right. So academia was the comfort zone. And had you always, when I, if we, if I was to have met you when you were like 12 or 13, had you always wanted a career and a life in academia? Was that your dream?
I didn't know that it was a possibility because it's not one of the things that's mentioned when you're a kid. It's like you can be a doctor or a police officer or athlete. Like being in philosophy didn't really exist. And I will say that it does align with my personality. So when I was younger, I was always very curious. I didn't really accept a lot of things that were put in front of me. I had to know more. I had to have a deeper understanding. I would get in trouble for talking too much. And now I do that for a living. Like I literally speak to people all the time. So it was in there, that desire to understand more and being a bit of a talker about, working out ideas.
So then how did you get find your way to philosophy? Because, and I ask this just because I'm very curious. I would love to be a fly on the wall when you were considering degree programs and doctorate programs and jobs. How did you pick philosophy and what did you think the job would be with that?
That's a good question. So
Especially since
when
we're
I
like not in ancient Greece when like philosophers were like a dime a dozen, I feel, you know?
Well, when I was in high school, I had very good friends in a very good school, but I went through a rather difficult time at home, and it was because my father had passed away, and that had and I'm an only child. It had a real impact on the relationship I had with my mother because she was, of course, dealing with this as well. And I mean, the kind of I didn't experience grief. I experienced anger and real resentment, and my grades dipped a lot. And I'm so grateful that I had teachers and I had friends, and my friends' parents were all there for me. But it was really a challenge to get out of that slump. And when I did go into university, and my freshman year, I took my first philosophy class, that spark was back. It was back. I loved what I was reading. We started with Socrates, this classical work of the Apology. It's a defense. It's his trial where he's talking about what it means to live life well. And I just didn't want to do anything except for study that. And because I was studying that and I was so alive, enriched with it, that all of my other studies also accelerated. I had to find that thing that would bring me back to life. And that was it. It was the space that allowed me to be the person who wants deeper meaning, the person who wants to argue, who wants to understand ideas. Philosophy allowed that space for me. And philosophy means love of wisdom. And so that's a pretty big ballpark. I can, as somebody who studies philosophy, examine a piece of literature. And I can also try to understand Brian Greene and string theory because the scope of what's possible to understand is just, it's like the world is at your fingertips with philosophy. So it allowed for that space to go in whatever direction I wanted.
I love that. I love that. So, if you had not become a teacher, I have a couple of people who are in college at the moment. So, these are very selfish questions I'm asking about a degree that does not have a ready-made job attached to it. So, if you had not gone into academia with your doctorate, what do you think would be the applications? What do you think you might have done as somebody who studied philosophy?
Well, when I graduated, I took the LSAT and the GRE. I applied and I got into both law school and graduate school. So I was really sit with, a conundrum.
Okay.
And I had to be honest with myself in that I had said law school, I think, to make everybody else comfortable. Because when you say you're a philosophy major, the question is, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to
That is
do?
what I'm asking 100%. I'm
So I said, I even worked in a law office. I mean, I did all the things, but I was just so drawn to the literature. And when people ask me, how did you choose it? And I say, it chose me. It's like I didn't decide to like chocolate either. I just tasted it and I liked it. And it's the same thing with philosophy. But to answer your question in a more concrete and practical manner, there is a growing number of people in the business space, in the corporate world, that are seeking out employees with humanities like degrees. And the reason is because they're better at understanding points of view, at communication, and research and analyzing things. So when you have a philosophy degree, you are armed with the skill set of critical thinking and breaking down arguments. It's great for advertising. It's great for
Wow.
rhetoric. It's great for speech writing. There's a lot of people, I mean, I'm in Los Angeles. There's a lot of people in the television and film industry. The writers have a minor in philosophy. So, and even in politics, Martin Luther King studied philosophy, Thomas Jefferson studied philosophy. So it is really, it's not narrow. Like, let's say getting an engineering degree, right? Like,
Right.
you don't go to get an engineering degree just to ponder engineering, right? You have some sort of a concrete output there. But with philosophy, it is just arming you with that ability to recognize information, good information, assess it, and, tell a story every once in a while at the holiday
Nope,
parties.
I love it. All right, thank you for humoring me as we went down that rabbit hole, but it's not every day that I talk to somebody who's got a doctorate in philosophy. I did the other day talk to somebody who had a degree in rhetoric, which that's the first person I'd ever known who directly got that. I did not know that was a thing. So I learn new things all of the time. Okay, so tell me more about this part of your life, like the second half of your 30s, because there was a change that happened in the beginning of your 40s. So you've got a successful career in academia. You love the topics that you're talking about. Tell me about family, kids, hobbies, friends. What is the full picture of your life look like at that time, right before you say, I need a new challenge?
I was commuting a lot, and I ended up listening to podcasts as I was commuting, and I started to think, just more about that process. And I was in this point when the picture of my life in my 30s was it was this rotation. And as far as relationships, I was in a long-term relationship, but the person I was in the relationship with didn't really have like a curious spirit. So if there was any activity, traveling or anything, it was always on my shoulders, and I felt very trapped. I felt very like I just needed more in every way, from work, from relationships, and there were no children. And so when I decided to part ways, then it was really like, okay, I got to figure this out. I got to step into the life, the curiosity, the adventures. It's up to me now. And so it was a solitary existence for a while. I mean, I had my friends and everything, but it gave me the space to really consider, wait a minute, what is it that I want to do with this degree? What is it I want to do with my life? So it's very solitary. And then when I started dating again, like around 39, 40, then I, added love to my life, added something new.
All right. So, would you say that at this point in your mid-30s, when you're going through a relationship change, you're questioning what you're doing, is one of the questions that's rattling around your head like, "Hey, is this all I'm going to do? Is this it? Is this
Yeah.
okay?"
I felt like, oh, wow, my life is determined and this is it for the next 30 years. And something that was kind of painful about it is that on the outside, nobody would have known because they could see that I was publishing, that I was working, that I, had good relationships with my students. Like they'd write positive things. Like on the outside, it looked like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing and doing it well. And but on the inside, I felt very isolated, and I just, like the curious spirit had just kind of deadened. I would by both the relationship choice and also by the work choice. I want to be cautious though about the relationship choice. Let me just say this as far as the imperfect adulting though. A lot of times we say that, like, it has to go forever, and then that's is what makes a relationship good. I wouldn't say that. The person I had met in earlier, like in my late 20s, was a great fit for me in my late 20s. And sometimes relationships end because you change and you grow. This happens with friendships, and this can happen with romantic partners. And I think women in particular feel a lot of guilt or shame, as though there's a failure. And I like to say, no, it was an end to a relationship. It no longer made sense. And so I just want to say that because I don't want to sound like I'm throwing that person under the bus.
I didn't get the impression that you were throwing them under the bus, but that's a very good point of clarity. And it is absolutely true. Like, one of the ways to look at relationships is that they all actually end at some point. So, like, if you think about it that way, the concept of forever is a little bit confusing. There's a professor named Stephanie Kuntz, and she wrote a book about the history of marriage, right? And what's really, really interesting is at the turn of the century, not the last one, but the one before it, the average length of a marriage was, I think, 10 years. And the reasons were obviously different than they are because divorces were not a thing. And now they're right about 12 years. And so there's like a concept that there was a time in history where they may have been forever, but forever had a different time frame. Forever at a different time frame. We have different concepts here. So people do think about it differently, and that's not to whatever works for people. If your relationship is 50 or 60 or 70 years, great. If you change relationships every 5 or 6 years, fine with me. Moving on. All right. So when we started this conversation, I would put dollars to donuts that people would have guessed that this was going to go the way of changing your career, but that isn't actually what happened. You add to it. You decide when you are 41 years old that you're going to start a podcast. And this for you is outside of your comfort zone. And I love that this is outside of your comfort zone because obviously for me, this is not outside my comfort zone. I'm just a person who is like, sure, I'll talk into a microphone. But also, you're a person who had a pretty good skill set of speaking in front of groups. So as a teacher and as an authority. And so I'm really interested to know what was it about the podcasting project that felt uncomfortable and maybe a little scary?
Yeah, like, will anybody listen? It's different when you're at the university and people are paying. And when you in the university, like in the classroom, I walk into the room and I'm the smartest one there. I mean, not in all ways, but you know what I mean. And so it's already established. But with podcasting, the goal with the podcast was to see if I could take this university type studies that we're doing and offer it to a broad audience. So not gatekeep what one pays an exorbitant amount of money for education in the classroom and do it in a fun way. But this, of course, would mean that my abilities as a teacher, as a communicator, were really going to be tested against, the World Wide Web. And I was definitely scared. What do I sound like? What if I say something dumb? Or if nobody listens, or if, that's all of those fears because it's no longer the place where I'm used to speaking. It's to people I don't know. And the internet can be cruel. I was also afraid of, what are comments that people are going to write publicly, like that kind of thing. And I also, the goal of it, or I mean the idea behind it was to interview experts from different fields. So I was putting myself in the position of a student and publicly, and not as the authority, which had been, my go-to, my comfort zone was the one who was explaining everything to everybody. With this, I'm interviewing people who have a scope of knowledge way outside of my expertise and learning from them. So that's, part of the hesitation. And also just the technology. Like I'm Gen X like you. I'm like, I know Microsoft Word. I mean, I read Aristotle. I don't need technology for that. So it meant sitting down and learning how it all works from scratch.
All right. So that was a wonderful answer. I love that you talked about you were afraid that nobody was going to listen, and also the reaction if people listened, because that's one of the things. If nobody listens, it's actually very safe. You can make a lot of mistakes and no one's going to hear it. So, but it's like no one's going to listen. Who am I to do this? Starting over as a beginner when you've been the authority in a classroom, starting a project where you don't have the credibility of an institution announcing you as, the authority figure in the room. I think those are good things to think about for sure. Okay, so here's a question. This is a fun question to ask for me, even though it's probably a little bit flawed because I'm asking you to think about something that you've actually already done. Thinking back to why you wanted to do this, what would you say now was the why before why it was important for you to get out of your comfort zone?
Why was it important to get out of my comfort zone? I think it's I think it's innate to people. I think it's with my personality type. It's not that way for everybody. There's people who, really find comfort and joy in a space. And for me, I have always kind of craved novelty. I've always craved like I want to. I mean, in Los Angeles, just a small example, there's tons of restaurants. I don't like to go to the same one. I want to look up and go to a different one. So that's just always been my spirit that I just need something new. And the, philosophy offered that for me because, like I said, I could study and read so many different things and it make it make sense. And then with the podcasting, I can reach out to people and, that I would have never met in real life. Or if I had gone and seen one of their events, I would have maybe elbowed my way to the front to say, hi, nice talk, and that's it. But now I can, see people who are coming up with something new. So it's the newness that is important for me to have a good quality of life. But I want to emphasize that's my thing.
Yeah, not everybody is
No,
somebody
no.
that pushes the boundaries in all places all the time. It's so, but okay. So, and does this show up in other spots of your life? Like you mentioned the restaurants. Like, are you a person who is constantly sort of pushing yourself to excel in all different ways and find new challenges?
I don't know if it's pushing. I think it's really like I just want to learn new things.
Okay.
I don't know if it's pushing. I think it's something that's really natural. I am a bit of a perfectionist. Like I think I do have that, that guard up because I don't want to look stupid or sound foolish. And part of that might just be from conditioning. That might be from the fact that there's not that many women in academia, or that when women present as an authority, that they have like this extra existential hurdle, that the cost of making an error is a little bit bigger. Like you can have the male professor who's the absent-minded professor, and that's all kind of fun and quirky. But if for a woman, it would be she's an airhead.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same thing. And I think that maybe that has just resonated with me, a bit more, like a bit of a fear of perception because I feel like so much is at stake.
Yes, I think that's an excellent topic. So I'm going to take a break and talk directly to the audience for a second, invite them into this conversation because it's a good place to do it. I post a discussion topic on social media, on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram for every single episode, and I invite you guys to come and join the conversation, answer the question. I'll be there in the comments. Gwendolyn will be there in the comments. Everybody will be there from the community. It's a fun thing to do. If you don't already follow the show on social media, you'll find the links in the show notes. All right. Picking up where we left off, you bring up a really interesting point about being about the difference between perception, sometimes or perceived perception, we could say, between men and women in different roles. I want to talk about your mindset as a 41-year-old woman who decides to intentionally put yourself out there in podcasting and the media. So what you shared on your intake form was because I think the wording you used is really, really good. You said you needed to address the lingering sense of vulnerability that comes with being in the media space, especially as a woman of a certain age. And I love that you use the word certain age and it's only 41. So anyway, that's a
Well, that
like
was 40, 41 when I started. I'm 47 now.
yeah, but a certain age, like when I read that, I was like, 41, is that the certain age? I'm not sure. Like, I would have thought, like, so I think that's really, I think it's a very, very real thing. This, do I fit into the mold that it looks like this is going to be? Things on media are very visual now, like they haven't ever been before. Share what some of your thoughts were as you were getting ready to, tell people you had this idea, whether you were going to speak it into the world when you were pitching the concept to people and thinking about it. What was going through your mind about this scrutiny?
One of my good friends who is a successful writer in his own right, and I was talking to him about advice, and he said, "Do good work, and people will come to you." And that changed my perspective because I also was worried, can I get any guests when I'm reaching out? How do I even do this? And what if nobody wants to come on the podcast? And he said, do good work and people will come to you. And that really stuck with me. So then I started to, put my area of focus more on what it is that I'm doing instead of what other people are thinking. And I try to keep that in mind even when, I'm talking to my students or doing some sort of a talk. I try to encourage people to not look at their phones first thing in the morning because you're doing a couple of things. You're looking at what other people are doing, or you're looking at what other people think about you. And the first part of your day should be about what you want to get out of the day. So I think that the vulnerability is, yeah, being open. Other people can hear me. I mean, people I knew when I was a kid, I'm like wondering, are they going to listen to this and think, oh, this is the dumbest thing. Who does she think she is? I was worried, would the university think this is so unserious of her? This is so unbecoming. I was concerned about all of those things and the vulnerability, of course, of when I say women of a certain age, is that, like youth and beauty is prioritized. And so I was very worried about putting my face out there because I didn't want to deal with that kind of a stress. And so I think that was the vulnerability. I will say, I mentioned this conversation with my friend, and the other people in my life were the close friends. They were very supportive. And my co-host, Rudy, he was all for it. He thought it was great. And I think that when you have people around you who will energize you, that makes a really big difference. And then also people who can you can reach out to and ask for help. I mean, so that was another shift, was that I didn't need help in my academic work. I went into the classroom, I knew all my stuff, I know how to write a paper, I know how to book a ticket for a conference. But then when it came to this, I don't know. I don't know. How do you get it on all the platforms? How do you edit it? How do you create a logo? How do you get sponsors? Like, I was in a very vulnerable position where I had to reach out to other people for help. And so that was also new for me.
And how did it feel when you put yourself in? Was it a positive experience? Did you feel invigorated and excited to put yourself into this space of trying new things and discovering? Did it feel risky? How did it feel to push yourself into this zone of uncomfortability?
It after that it felt really great, and it's continued to feel great. I've had a chance to meet other people who are in podcasting in all different areas of the business, and I found it to be a very welcoming crowd. It's not snobby at all. People are so nice, and they'll give you even more tips, or they'll introduce you to somebody that you could have as a guest, and then you can pass on your guest information to the other person. So the podcast space is so welcoming, and I was allowed to be my nerdy, bookish self. That was another thing that I think I was concerned with, because in the university space, I can be as nerdy and bookish as I want, and it's completely appropriate and not weird. It's called for. But that doesn't translate into, social gatherings and parties. I'm not going to talk about like if life has any meaning on a Friday night. And so you find ways to curb your interests with someone like me who's super bookish, to curb your interests in order to fit a social gathering. But with the podcast, I'm able to go ahead and take that me that's in the university space and be as bookish and nerdy. And it's fun. So it feels cathartic. It feels really good to have another place to be that way.
Oh, that's such a great answer. All right. So we talked about the mindset that you had when you were starting and the concepts that you had bouncing around your head about being vulnerable to be a woman, a 41-year-old woman starting something in the media. Your friend gave you the tip, which I think is absolutely spot on. Focus on creating good things, and that's the place to focus. I want to like shift it a teeny tiny bit because as a person who chose to step into a public-facing podcast, media role, you are actually an example at that point to other people that it can be done by somebody who is a 41-year-old woman. And so, right, you're like a living, breathing example. You started and there you are, you're out there. So, but when you were looking to put this together and you were questioning whether or not there was a space for you in this space, who were you looking to for inspiration that it was possible to do something like this?
When I was doing all of those commutes, I was listening to podcasts. And so I was starting to get a sense of how they were structured, how they worked. And they would be anything from information, like news, or Serial was really huge for me, that kind of journalistic style. different interviews that were funny, and that's how I kind of got an idea of what it was that I wanted to do. But I didn't know if talking about things with a philosophy lens would land at all. I had, I had no idea. And so I think that that's how the comfort started to, I started to get comfortable, because and that just happens, like with practice, and the more you get into it, then you still have that comfort. And the beautiful thing is that it's still expanding. We can still just, keep going. Did I put in the intake form the other thing that happened in 2019 when I decided to start a podcast?
No, I don't think so. What else happened?
This is where I was like, this was not just a little shift, but in 2019, the same time where I'm like, okay, I'm going to figure out how to do this thing, and I have no technology background or whatever, but I'm going to figure it out. I became pregnant.
Oh, okay. So lots of things were
So
changing.
at the same time, I remember, because it was 2019, the semester was ending, and Rudy and I were just starting. I think we had done maybe two interviews, and I had just started to figure it out. And then the summer hit, and I had to give a paper in DC, and I came back, and I was so tired. And I thought, wow, I guess did the podcasting and the paper and the semester has really worn me out. And I was just all of a sudden, but I was sleeping, but I was sleeping to the point where I could not keep my eyes open. And I used to exercise regularly. I was part of a CrossFit. And all of a sudden, if I walked a mile, I needed a long nap. And it took me a while to figure out what was going on. And it turns out, because that hadn't been a possibility in my mind, because for years I was told that it was a very minimal chance, really not likely for my life path. And so by the time it dawned on me, I called up my friend who was a nurse, and I'm like, this can't be right, right? She's like, you need to see a doctor. Please go. By the time I saw the doctor, who I had never met before because I'd never been pregnant before, I remember when he walked in and he just kind of glanced at me, sat down, looked at the notes, and then he looks back up at me and he says, you think you're pregnant? And I said, I don't know. And he said, you're 41. I said, I know. And he did the ultrasound and he said, you're almost out of your first trimester. And that to me is amazing, because it's like, well, my mind had tricked me to not believing this was a possibility when all the signs were there. And so what I found myself is in 2019, not only was I adding to my regular course work, but now I was going to experience this thing and try to sort all that out. So 2019 was the beginning of a huge shift. And then 2020, of course,
2020.
she was born in January. And then right after that, we had the lockdown. And as a result of the lockdown, I was home with my daughter, but I was able to do more podcasting and actually learn more, because that time it took to get ready, the time it took to drive and all that stuff, I was in a space where I could really, really learn and figure it out. And it's kind of interesting to have this as like part of the historical record, because Rudy and I are figuring out what the hell's going on with COVID, and we're recording ourselves. It's in every it's it comes up. It's shadowed like in every single episode. So that's also interesting. In addition to me becoming a new mom, so there's huge shifts. The person I am in my 40s does not resemble the person I was before at all.
That is really interesting. No, and that beginning fatigue when it takes a lot of energy to grow a brand new human being, and it will knock you. Many people are very tired. I remember when I was in my 20s and I had a coworker, and I was in my 20s at a phase where I was not like, I mean, I was aware that people had babies, but it was not like something I was really thinking about because it wasn't my time frame. And I remember I went into a coworker's office and I was like, hello, hello, where are you? And she was newly pregnant and hadn't told anybody. She'd gotten so tired that she'd crawled like under her desk. She was napping on the floor. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. Do you have the flu? Do you need to go home? Like, what is this? And she was like, okay. So, yes, a lot of fatigue. All right. So, you were listening to other podcasts. You were very inspired. You were enjoying the process. Life goes topsy-turvy. Everything is changing. Your family structure changes. Lockdown, everybody has a lockdown story. Everything is changing. So, Oh, you know what you did tell me? What you did tell me was you said one intentional change, that's the podcast, and one unexpected blessing, that's the pregnancy. That's what you told me.
Yeah,
So there we
all in
go.
the
Cool.
same time frame. But I will say a lot of that stress and concern about the vulnerability, having her, that changed it. Because the desire to be perfect, for everything to sound right, to not seem foolish, is impossible when you have a baby that is crying, or maybe, you got to clean the poop. I mean, I
Yeah.
can't. I've literally had shit under my fingernails, and then I have to hit record. And so that really helped me that when there was even a couple of the episodes, she's got a little giggle or a cry in the background, and I kept it in. I didn't edit it out because I'm like, hey, this is the imperfect adulting. I'm not going to go ahead and pretend that I'm juggling everything perfectly. Because what happens is that when she is all taken care of, then that means maybe I haven't showered. If all my emails are answered, that means a podcast is not getting released. If all the podcasting is happening, then maybe I'm a little bit late grading the quizzes. And when the dishes are in the sink, it's because I've been taking care of all these other things. So this desire for a perfect presentation, I was almost forced to let go of it. And I'm glad I did, because now it's like when something goes a little bit, to sideways, it doesn't bother me as much. I'm like, oh, this
Yeah.
is life. That's what makes life good. That's what makes life fun, or it
I
can.
agree. Yes. And when we say putting something, getting into our comforts, getting out of our comfort zone, a lot of times I feel like that has the connotation that we're emphasizing hard work. So it's like a CrossFit workout, like high intensity. And then the way I think of getting outside of the comfort zone is putting myself in that spot that you're talking about, where you're like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to allow myself to be in that space. Or I don't know if I know how to do this, or I don't know if I'm going to do a good job, but I'm going to be okay with that sense of discomfort, as I have to do it anyway. And parenting, I will let you know if I ever get to the point where I'm not in that space raising my children, because I have not gotten there yet. I don't know if it exists. I feel like it's the greatest fake out of adulthood, is that you think that like one experience will prepare you for the next experience that's like that, and it doesn't actually work like that in my life. One experience is one way, and the next time you think it's going to repeat, totally different. Totally different. That's just my experience. All right. So, in a minute, we're going to do the final fun questions, which I'm very excited about. But I want to make sure that we talk about your show, which is called Good is in the Details. And that's the name of the show. You have a co-host named Rudy Salo. You say the show offers education, insight, and laughter. Tell us about what it is, because I'm excited to hear about that.
Oh, thanks. Well, I mean, it's kind of like what I've been talking about. It's really my curiosity just being displayed for the whole world. So the less I understand of something, the more I want to find the person who's the expert and invite them on. And this has a really big range. But Rudy is a lawyer. He's a finance lawyer. He also loves sci-fi and film noir, and he's done some stand-up comedy too. So he's a really great interviewer as well. And we really want to take a philosophical lens. So, whatever somebody's area of expertise is, I'm always kind of wondering, what are some key definitions, some challenges? How does this unfold in culture? For example, we had a film expert who wrote a book about haunted houses in movies, and she was able to connect the way in which we experience these types of films and what was happening in American culture at the time, and how they go together. What does it say about like your house has to be your biggest investment and is so important? And then in all of these films, it shows that it's so important that they're willing to buy something that's haunted, right? Like, I hadn't really thought about the economic reality that would have then been reflected in a film like Poltergeist, right?
Right.
So it's that kind of stuff. We had another attorney on. He's a famous homicide prosecutor, and he wrote a book called The Book of Murder with all these incredible cases that he worked on. And he also worked on the dating show. What was it? The serial killer from the 70s? Remember the
Oh yeah, on
dating?
the dating show,
Yeah.
the Zodiac. No, that's not the Zodiac.
No,
Yeah,
the
no,
Zodiac.
but the dating
Yeah.
show. Yeah.
And he worked on that. But how we were able to get it to fit with a philosophy lens is that the underscoring nature of his work is seeking out justice. And so we want to talk about also that and the critical thinking skills that are required in order to put a case together. And he also had such incredible empathy about the victims. Like, he wasn't sensationalizing the crimes. He really, really focused on the lives of the victims and their families. And I thought that was incredible. So the type of stuff we'll do is we'll talk about like pop culture or different areas of expertise and to see how it's relevant to our lives or how we can just expand our happiness with intellectual growth.
That is fantastic. And so do would you say that you have proven your original, you had the question, you started at the beginning, right? You started at the beginning of the question, is there a space for a philosophical podcast in the marketplace? And it seems like yes, there is.
Yeah, there's a few out there that do it really well. We're not the only ones, but yeah, there's a market for it, and that's exciting. And that's what I won't talk too long, but there are so many of my students who did not major in philosophy, but they were taking it as a GE. And I would keep in touch with them, or they would send me an email that they saw a movie and it reminded them of something we talked about in class. And I realized that there is a real, joy that comes from thinking deeply about material. Do you have free will? Does God exist? Right? Like those kinds of things people seem to enjoy going into depth about, but there's not a space for it except for maybe the university philosophy class. So I thought maybe we create another space in the podcast world where it's okay to nerd out and just think deeply for a while.
Well, and it actually is a unique time in communication history and technology coming together, right? Because you were able to put this together. Podcasting is very much like the audio version is very much like talk radio, but it's on demand. So it's perfectly suited for very, very specific topics that people want to go deep in. And they can, you can create it and they can consume it on their own time frame. And so it's really, really interesting how they're very tight silos of very specific things that are amazingly successful. When I launched my first podcast in 2016, one of the people who mentored me had a podcast about horses. And I was like, I just can't even, it's like so hard for me to even conceive of the audience for that because outside of anything that I do, but it works. He's built a community and an audience and all of those things. So it doesn't surprise me that you have been able to attract many, many people who are interested in philosophy. I'm going to put the address for your show in the notes. People can find where to get that. I'm sure that you're on all the audio platforms and YouTube. And so now, Gwendolyn, are you ready for the final three questions? So when I was doing research for this, I think that I looked up, is it, did you go to school in Belgium? Okay, all right. So this question is based on the fact that I learned that about that. I like to ask people from Bel who have lived in Belgium how many languages they speak.
I've been back in the States for a while, and when you don't use it, like you lose it. So French, I would say, is my second language, but I'm much better at passive understanding now. If somebody asked me for directions, I'm not quite sure where they would end up, but I can still read it because that's all, recognition. And I can understand Dutch to the point where I can order in Dutch, but that's I wouldn't be able to read it or anything like that. I don't understand the grammar structure and a little bit of Spanish here and there just by virtue of being in Southern California. But languages are fun.
Languages are fun.
I
I
tried
think that
German and it was too hard.
Dutch is fun because it looks like some of the words look like American words that have been misspelled. Like it's like you if you remove some of the letters, like there's extra A's and things, you're like, oh, that looks like that. But I speaking Dutch, I do not have enough exposure to do that. So but Belgium is a place where people speak lots and lots of languages. Okay, so very, very good. Okay, so if an old friend that you hadn't seen in about 10 years or more, like an old friend, calls and says, I'm in town, but just for today, can we get together? What do you do? Do you drop everything and make plans with the friend you haven't seen in a long time? Or do you beg off and say, sorry, I wish I had more notice or something else altogether?
No, I would see the person. I would probably, my daughter's 5 and a half now, so I'd probably have to be like, and she's coming with me or something like that. I'd probably have to bring her with me, but no, I would definitely, I would be like, yeah, let's go meet. Tell my students, hey, We're gonna, here's an online assignment. Like, how do we do something? But yeah, if it was somebody I hadn't seen in a long time and they were in town, I would definitely drop everything and go see them. Yeah.
Love it. Absolutely love it. All right. So, if I think we can divide the world into two groups of people, don't worry, this is not a political question, I promise. So, I think there are people who are ready to go to a karaoke bar at any given time and they have a song and everything ready to go. And then there's the other group of people who would not be caught dead in a karaoke situation and they will beg off and go to do something else. Which group are you?
I would not. You know what's crazy is that one of my closest friends from the third grade, she loves it. I don't get it. And it's not like she's a fabulous singer or anything like that. There, no, like it's terrible. Wait, I hope she doesn't hear this. But she and I get a kick out of the fact that she loves it. Like, you're right. They are two totally different
Two
mentalities.
totally different people.
That is it. That is a no. That is a no from me.
Yeah, I'm also, I have been to see people I've been to karaoke bars with friends who love it and they have a really good time. And when I saw them, this question is absolutely inspired by those experiences because they all had the songs ready to go. And they're like, "What is your karaoke song?" I was like, "No, I don't have one. This is
I
not
don't have one
happening."
either.
All right, that's it, Gwendolyn. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you, Amy. Great.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.